Okay, this week's parasha is Parashas Re'eh, and we're going to start, not at the beginning, of course, but Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk He, which is page 1000. Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk He, it's about 6 lines from the top. Rather, to the place that Hashem your God will choose from all your tribes, Lasum Eshmoy Sham, to place his name there, the Shechnai Sidrashu Uvas Hashama, that means you shall seek out his presence and come there. Vahavesim Shama, and you will bring there Oiloi Sechem, your burnt offerings, Vizivchechem, and your Zivchechem means your peace offerings, your carbon shlamim, the eis masrei seichem, and your tithings, or tithes, I'm sure was the correct word, the eis trumas yetchem, and that which your hands have separated, v'nidreichem, your vows, v'nidveiseichem, your donations, v'chares pekachem v'seinchem, and the firstborn of your cattle and your sheep. All these are brought to the Beis HaMikdash. They're all supposed to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash, not consumed or offered outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Pasuk mentions burnt offerings, peace offerings, and then it mentions Masrei Seichem, your tithes. So what are we referring to? What kind of tithe are we referring to? What kind of tenth are we referring to? So Rashi says, Masrei Seichem, again, it's plural, okay? So which tithes are we referring to? So Rashi says, Maiser Behema, the tithings of animals. Every year you're supposed to take your animals and you're supposed to put them through a corral.
A slot,
okay. Right. And the animals come out one by one, and every tenth you go ahead and mark it that it's the tenth, and it's sanctified. Okay? You give it to the Kohen offers it in the Beis HaMikdash. That's one of the tithes that we're mentioning, that we're referring to here. And the other one is Umaiser Sheni Lecha Lefnim Menachayma. And then we have a tithing called the Maiser Sheni, the second tithing, and that has to be brought to Yerushalayim and eaten in Yerushalayim.
Didn't say Yerushalayim yet.
No, but that's what Rashi says. Okay? The point is you're bringing it to the place. Now the place, you're right, in that case the place is not the Beis HaMikdash per se, but it's Yerushalayim. Okay. Now, just to talk about a little bit about Maaser Sheni, we know that when we have our grain, there are certain things we separate from our grain and we have to give it away. We're not supposed to treat it regularly, right? We take off a certain amount, we give to the Kohen, that's called Truma. Then from what's left, we take a tenth of what's left and we give it to the Levi. That's called Maaser Rishon. That's the first tithing that's done. Then we have either Maaser Sheni, a second tithing, meaning for what's left, we say take a second tithing from the grain. That second tithing is sanctified. You cannot eat it outside of Yerushalayim. You have to bring it up to Yerushalayim and eat Yerushalayim. And in case it's too much to bring, you could actually, you know, switch it for money and bring the money to Yerushalayim and send the money to Yerushalayim. Now, so in essence, that's the second tithing. Now, the second tithing could actually either be what we just mentioned, Maaser Sheni, where you tithe the remainder and you have to bring it to Yerushalayim, where you eat it. Or you're going to be the second tithing, which is not called Maaser Sheni, is Maaser Ani, the tithing to the poor. You're either, after you tithe for the lady, you're either going to tithe for Maaser Sheni for yourself to eat in Yerushalayim, or you're going to tithe and give it to the poor. Now, depending on the cycle, depending on what year it is, that will decide whether the second tithing is going to be what we call Maaser Sheni, where you eat the fruit in Yerushalayim, or whether you're going to give it to the poor. So, we have a 7-year cycle, right? The 7th year is the Shemitah year, which is this past year in Eretz Yisrael, right? Then you have 6 years preceding. Now, with every year, you have to go ahead and give Truma. And every year, you have to give Maaser Rishon, the first tithing, which goes to the Levi. That's the first year. During the first, and that's every year. Every year, you got to give Maaser Rishon to the Levi. in year one and year two, again of the cycle, you give Maaser, you have to separate Maaser Sheni, where you separate the grain, you eat in Yerushalayim. The third year is when you give Maaser Ani, the tithing to the poor. Year four and five is again Maaser Sheni, where you take Yerushalayim and you eat it. Year six is Maaser Ani, where you give to the poor. Okay, that's the cycle. And then Shemitah, you don't do anything. There's no Truma, there's no Maaser during Shemitah, nothing.
Do you have anything left? No, just kidding.
Okay. Now, I saw an interesting question from Rabbi Zevlef of Eretz Yisrael. And he asks, wouldn't it be more appropriate to give Maaser Ani before Maaser Sheni? In the cycle, you're first separating Maaser Sheni, which is for yourself, and then you're giving to the Ani. Wouldn't it seem more appropriate that first we should give a tithing to the poor and then take for ourselves? That's his question. Interesting question. And he answers the question in the following way. He answers it by starting off with the words of the Rambam. Okay. The middle Rambam there. No, one more. That one. Thank you. So the Rambam Maimonides, in his section called Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, the laws of the gifts that we give to the poor. So here's where the Rambam discusses tzedakah. And in Perek Asir, in the 10th Perek, Halacha Dalet, the fourth law in chapter 10, Kol Hanaisein Tzedakah, whoever gives charity, La'ani to a poor person, Besever Panim Ra'is, with a negative expression, okay, not with a cheerful expression, but with a sour expression. Upanu kavushes bakarka, and his face in the ground. Here, does anyone want to look at the poor man in the face when he gives it to him? Okay, says the Rambam, afilu nasin loy elav zehubim. Even if he gives this poor man 1,000 gold coins, right? Better than your friend with the scratch ticket, yeah? Avad zechusai, he has lost his merit, the hefsida, and he has, avad zechusai means he has lost his merit, the hefsida, and he has ruined it. Okay. Ela neisen loy besever panim yafis, rather, he has to give it with a cheerful expression, ubesimcha, with joy, umisainini mayat sarasai, and while giving him the tzedakah, you bemoan his fate with him, meaning to show him that you feel his pain. Okay, umedaber loydivrei tanchum tachanunim v'nichumim, and you're supposed to give him words of comfort. So when you give the poor man, you should be giving it to him with a cheerful expression. You're happy to give it to him. At the same time, you show him that you empathize with him, and you try to comfort him. But the beginning of the Rambam tells us, if you give tzedakah to a poor man with a sour expression, that person has lost his merit, and he has ruined it. Now what does this mean? He has lost his merit and he has ruined it. Well, he lost the mitzvah? That's what it means, no mitzvah. If you give tzedakah, and you don't give it with a smile, you just like hand it to the poor man, with the point of, go away. Okay? It sounds like you don't get a mitzvah tzedakah. The thing is that, first of all, what are these two things? Rambam says two things. He has lost his merit, the hibsida, and he has ruined it. What are those two things? Now, you know, Rambam, there are commentaries on the Rambam, where the commentaries show what's a Rambam's source? Where does he get this law from? So the commentary of Radvaz on this line of the Rambam, who says, if you give tzedakah to a poor man with a sour expression, yeah, that you've, you know, it's no good, it's not good. Kozel nilmar perakamad babasra. All this is derived from a statement of the Gemara in the first perak of Masechta of Tractate Babasra. Amar Reb Yitzchak, the sage Reb Yitzchak said, kol ha'neisem pruta la'ani, If you give a small coin, a coin, to a poor man, misparach b'sheish brachas, he gets six blessings. V'hamafaisai b'devarim, and one who appeases him with words, meaning while you give him the tzedakah, you also make him feel good, misparach b'yudalef, you get 11. V'yalef mikroi, and the Gemara derives this from certain psukim. If you give, it says you give the pruta, you give the coin to the poor man, you get six blessings. If while you give him the coin, you also are mafayis him, you make him feel good, you appease him, you make him feel good, you get 11 blessings. That is the source of where the, of what the Rambam says, that if you give it with a sour expression, you've lost your merit. You've lost your merit. Now, it would seem to me that based on the Radvaz's comment, Radvaz, when he says the Rambam source, is not quoting a Gemara that says, you lost your mitzvah. There doesn't seem to be, he's not quoting a Gemara that says, the Gemara says, if you give to a poor man with a sour expression, you lose your mitzvah. He doesn't bring that. He brings a Gemara to show there's a difference between just giving tzedakah and giving tzedakah and at the same time making him feel good. From the Gemara, it seems that you have a greater mitzvah. You have a greater merit if you make him feel good when you give the tzedakah. Now, again, maybe, if you just look at the Gemara says if you give a pruta, right? Does that mean a pruta, does that include a pruta? Now, clearly that's a pruta without making him feel good. Does that mean a pruta, when you give a pruta, make him feel bad? You know, there's three things. You can give a sour expression, you give no expression, and they can make him feel good.
If you give him a pruta,
so pruta's a coin, small coin. What?
You're not giving him very much.
Doesn't make good, but the point is, you're giving him something, and you're getting something. My point is, again, and maybe it's not a foolproof from what the Radvaz says, but I don't think the Rambam means. And again, I think it's somewhat implied in the Radvaz's source that again, there's no source that says you don't have the mitzvah. The source is clearly a source that says, depending on how you make him feel when you're giving him the tzedakah, that makes a difference of how big a mitzvah you have. But it doesn't say any. But I don't know if that's but that's not a source to say that if you give it to him with a sour face, you have no mitzvah at all. So it's very possible. So I would think that the Rambam does not mean that when you give tzedakah and you didn't give it to rehearse with a, and you even give the person with a sour expression, right? You did a mitzvah. Yeah. He gave him tzedakah. He did a mitzvah. But clearly from the Gemara, it's pretty clear that depending on, you know, how you do the mitzvah and how you make the poor man feel is going to make a difference to the level of the mitzvah that you have. The Gemara says, if you just give a pruta, you get six blessings. If you're mefayis him, if you make him feel good while you're doing it, you get 11 blessings. So the Rambam says, yeah, if you go ahead and you give tzedakah to a poor man with a sour expression, you have diminished your mitzvah. So, meaning the Rambam is trying to say, if you give it to him with a sour expression on your face and the ground, even you don't give a look in his face, you have diminished your mitzvah. You could have had a bigger mitzvah and you diminished it. Now, I would say that lies in his words, v'hifsida. Hafsid means to lose something, right? Hifsida, you've diminished it. You've caused your mitzvah to have lost a part of it. What does the first part of the Rambam mean when it says, Avad Zechusa, he loses his merit? So to that I like to suggest that the Rambam before mentions a famous Gemara. The Gemara says, Kol HaMerachim Al HaBriyos, if you Kol HaMerachim, Rachman Alav. If you have mercy on others, Hashem has mercy on you. That's what the Gemara says. Hashem treats you as you treat others. Okay? So therefore, what the Rambam could mean is that if you gave him the tzedakah, but you get him with a sour face, you certainly weren't too merciful to him. You know, you gave him the money, you gave him something, but you made him feel like 2 cents. Merciful, you were too merciful, you weren't. And therefore, Avad Zechusai, the first part of the Rambam, when he says he loses his merit, means that because you gave the, if you would have given the tzedakah, even regularly, right? So, there would have been an act of mercy, and you would have had the merit of whoever shows mercy, Hashem is merciful to him. The special protection that comes, if you're merciful to others, Hashem is merciful to you. You gave it to him with a sour expression, there was no mercy there. You lost the merit, number one. Number two, Hefsida means you actually have decreased, diminished the mitzvah itself. Because as the Gemara says, when you just give a pruta, you get 6 brachas. When you mefayis him, when you make him feel, get 11 brachas. So you've diminished the merit of the mitzvah itself. What you can be rewarded for from the mitzvah itself, you've lost that out on that also. You've diminished it also. So you've got a basic mitzvah. You've got a very, very basic mitzvah. And every mitzvah has something to it. But because you gave it to him with panim kavushis, you gave it to him with a sour expression, you lost the merit that comes, the protection that comes, based on the principle of if you're merciful on others, Hashem is merciful to you, number one. And number two, hefsida, you've diminished and ruined the mitzvah itself. Because we know from the Gemara, depending on how you make the poor man feel, how good you make him feel, that makes a difference in how much reward you receive for it.
I think the poor man is embarrassed even to ask.
That's true.
He's feeling,
That's true. That's very true. Okay.
To begin with it.
Yeah. So, all right. So we see from the Gemara, from this statement from the Rambam, that, how much, there's a very big difference on how you do the mitzvah of tzedakah will make a very big difference to how big a mitzvah you have. And therefore, Rabbi Lev says like this. The Torah knows that, we have to give Maaser Ani. We have to give a tenth to the poor man. We can give a tenth to the poor man with a sour expression, with no expression, or with a positive expression. The way the Torah wants to help us do that. The Torah wants to help us do the mitzvah of Maaser Ani in the proper way. How does it do that? It tells us first that when we're going to take a second tithing, the second tithing actually is first going to go to us. But, even though it's going to go to you, you're not going to be able to treat it the way, you can't do with it what you want. You're going to have to take it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. You're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim. So you're going to eat it, it's going to be yours. But there's restrictions, Hashem restricts you how you're going to eat it. That already instills in a person that which he has is not under his control. It's Hashem's gift, and Hashem decides what you're going to do with it. Number one. Number two, the pasuk that we read says, actually the next pasuk says, "Ba'achaltem sham l'tnei Hashem Elokeichem usmachtem b'chol mishlach yedchem." You shall eat there these things mentioned above before Hashem your God, and you shall rejoice. You have to do it in a state of joy. So even though I had to schlep this up, I had to schlep it all up, and eat it only in Yerushalayim, I'm expected to do that with joy. Not only is it that I'm not in control of what seems to be mine, when I actually am going to be doing it only the way that Hashem wants, I'm supposed to rejoice doing it. This is where the Torah is trying to give us the proper mindset of how we have to look at what's ours, and therefore it makes it easier for us to give to the poor in the proper way. It's very difficult to give to the poor because of the fact that we see it as ours and we want it and we need it. And the Rabbeinu Shem is trying to tell us that tzedakah really means that I gave you something to share with others. And the way that that's instilled within us, that what we have is not ours, it's a gift from Hashem, and He decides how we deal with it. Therefore, and that will now help us when we give to the poor to actually give with a full heart. Therefore, the Torah says, my sershen of the second tithing comes first. And learn the lesson that what you have is not under your control. It's a gift from Hashem and He decides what you do with it. After you've gone through that lesson twice, then when you give to the poor, you'll then give to the poor with the proper frame of mind, with the proper expression, and doing it in a way that makes them feel good. Because it's not for you to feel bad what you're giving away. Because what you're giving away is what Hashem gave you to give away, to serve Him with. Okay, so that's his explanation as to why we first do Maaser Sheni, and then we do Maaser Ani. Okay, the next thing that I would like to do with you. Okay, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel. This is actually, we'll start on page 1000, it's page 1008. When you hear, or if you hear, in one of your cities, that Hashem has given you to dwell there, and you've heard it being said, wicked people have gone out from amongst you, and they have caused the dwellers of their city to go astray, saying, let us go and serve other gods that you have not known. Meaning, you hear in a city that people have now can influence others to worship idols, to go against, to stop believing in Hashem, to start worshiping other gods. Vidarashta, you shall research. The chakart, you shall investigate. The shahalta etev, you shall inquire well. V'hinei emes nochen adavar, behold, it's true. Nesasa ta'eva hazais b'kerbecha, this abomination has been done in your midst. So what do you do then? And a whole city, or at least the majority of the city, have become idol worshippers. Hake sa'ke es yoshvei rahi lefi charev, that city has to be wiped out by sword. Ha'charem oisa v'eskol asherba v'espehemta lefi charev, you have to destroy everything. V'eskol shalo tikbites, and all the booty of that city you shall gather, al teich rechayva, into the marketplace, v'sarafta ba'esh, and you shall burn in fire, v'sa'ir, the city, v'etzchol shol, and all its booty, kol completely, l'Hashem elokecha, Hashem your God, v'ha'isa tel oilem, it shall be an eternal heap, v'yisibana oida, can never be rebuilt. V'yidvach b'yat chamu min acherim, nothing shall remain with you from that which has been cast away, destroyed, so that Hashem shall take back his anger, and he shall give you mercy, and he shall be merciful to you, and he shall multiply you, whereas he has sworn to your fathers. So this is a tragic situation. An entire city, or at least the majority of the city, have gone astray. They have become worshippers of pagan gods. And it's an entire city, or it's considered an entire city, doing this. City's got to be wiped out. When you do that, what does it say? Hashem's anger will go away, and he shall give you mercy and have mercy upon you. What is this? What are these two things? It sounds repetitious. He'll give you mercy, and he'll be merciful to you. Sounds like the same thing. What are these two things? Says the Arachayim, that what it means is like this. One can imagine that even if, you know, here it is, you have a mitzvah to wipe out a city. Mitzvah to wipe out a city, completely wipe it out. That's not a very easy thing to do. And one might think that after doing so, because they have performed what is, you know, an act of cruelty, an act of murder, even though, again, they had to do it, but that is liable to create within a person a nature of cruelty. You know, a person does an act of cruelty, a person changes. It changes a person. People who go to war and they start shooting and killing, it has an effect on them. And here you go ahead and you wipe out this entire city. Yeah, you had a mitzvah to do it. You had a mitzvah to do it. But you're still a human being. You did an act of murder. It's liable to create within you this new nature, this new cruel nature. Says the Pasuk, V'nasan lecha rachamim. If you are concerned that by doing this mitzvah you will now develop a tendency toward cruelty, V'nasan lecha rachamim, Hashem shall give you mercy. That means Hashem, who is the source of mercy, will give you mercy. He will instill within you the trait of mercy. This act that would seemingly or naturally instill within you cruelty, Hashem says, I will counter that. Because I will now then instill mercy within you. So that there will be no negative, there will be no negative influence, negative effect on you. That's the first part. V'natzen lecha rachem, he'll give you mercy. V'richamcha, and he'll be merciful to you. What does that mean? So the Aruch Haim explains what that means is we had a principle that we just said before. If you're merciful, Hashem will be merciful to you. If you're not merciful, then Hashem is not merciful to you. So if it would come out that Hashem would not make up, right? If Hashem would not instill within you mercy to make up for what the act of murder could have done to you. If Hashem wouldn't have done that, you know, you have a mitzvah and then you got to deal with the effects, if that's what would have happened. And what would have happened is you would naturally develop this trait of cruelty. Then Hashem can't be merciful to you. Because the rule is, if you're merciful, then Hashem is merciful to you. If you're not merciful, then Hashem is not merciful to you. Therefore, now the pasuk says, once Hashem gives you mercy, meaning once Hashem makes sure that you still have the trait of mercy in you, then he'll be able to have mercy on you. Because that's the way it works. If you're merciful to others, Hashem is merciful to you. If you're not merciful to others, Hashem is not merciful to you. Now that Hashem will counteract the effects of the murder by instilling within you the trait of mercy, now Hashem will be able to have mercy on you. In other situations, he'll be able to be merciful to you. You'll have that special protection. Hashem will be merciful to you because you are a merciful person. If you wouldn't be merciful, even though it came from this act that you were obligated to do, but now you wouldn't be merciful anymore, then you lose the merit of Hashem being merciful to you. V'herbecha, Hashem will multiply you, says the Aruch Haim. That means that although you just wiped out an entire city, right? That's a loss of life. That could be a big chunk of the Jewish people being lost. Hashem says, if you do what you're supposed to do, herbecha, Hashem will multiply you. Hashem will make sure that those people that were lost will be replaced. The Jewish people will not be diminished because of it.
Is this the case with what we were talking about last week with
my understanding, that was an Iran Idachas. They didn't do Avodah Zarah there.
But there was, I saw something with Pesel
Licha
was involved with the whole.
I don't know. Okay.
This fellow, the one that was the concubine that was killed, was from Shevet Levi, and Levi went with this fellow to.
Okay. Now, Reb Chaim Shulevitz points out from this Aruch Haim something very interesting. And that is that, you know, we have this principle, if you're merciful, Hashem is merciful to you. Right? Consequently, if you're not merciful, Hashem is not merciful to you. So one could have taken that statement and understood it, or understood the implication, that it's a punishment, right? If you should have been merciful and you weren't merciful, Hashem will be merciful to you. But from here we see that in this case, it wasn't that you were supposed to be merciful and you weren't. On the contrary, Hashem said, wipe out the city. You're supposed to do this act of cruelty. Right? So it wasn't I was supposed to do otherwise. This is what I was supposed to do. And still, Aruch Haim says, if at the end of the day, I had to do this, and by doing this, I would now lose my trait of mercy, Hashem wouldn't be merciful back. Because it's not a question of a punishment. It's not a question of punishment. I should have been merciful and I wasn't, so Hashem is not merciful to me. It's part of the spiritual nature of the world. If you're merciful, Hashem is merciful to you. If you're not merciful, Hashem is not merciful to you. That's the mechanics. That's how it works. It's not a punishment. That's, so to speak, the spiritual nature of how things run. And Reb Chaim Shulevitz points this out from a very interesting comment made by Yisrael Salanter in Ar Yisrael. You know, there's a Gemara that says, whoever is merciful, Hashem is merciful to you. There's another Gemara that says, if kol ha-maver al-midaysav, maverin olav al-kol-pshav. Maver-daysav means that if somebody does something to you, they insult you, they embarrass you, they hurt you, so naturally you react back to it. And not always is reacting back to when somebody does something to you necessarily wrong. You have to make sure it stays under control, but, you know. And then there's something where if you are maver al-midaysav means you pass over your measure. Which means, although you had a right to, so to speak, mete out and measure out something to your friend because what he did to you, you pass it over. You don't react. You don't get back at him. So basically, there you had the ability to, so to speak, get back at someone, and you didn't do so. Hashem says, okay, when I have a right to get back at you, I won't do it either. Okay. So that's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, I believe. So there is a Gemara brought down talks about there were two sages. There was Rabbi Akiva and I think it was Rabbi Tarfon. It's a Gemara in Tainus. Right. No, it was Rabbi Lez, Rabbi Akiva. It was a situation where there was a drought. And the Mishnah in Tainus talks about when there's a drought, there's a whole procedure of fasting and special prayers that are said. So the Gemara says, "Ma'ase Rebbe Elazar Shiyor Lefnei Ateva." So the sage Rebbe Elazar, he was the chazan, he led the service. V'amar chavdal et brachas. He said the 24 blessings, which are special Shemayna Esri, that said in case of a drought. V'loinene, his prayers were not answered. Now he wasn't just the chazan in the sense of, you know, the chazan there was the person who, you know, said the prayers for everyone. And it all rested on his merit. So Rabbi Lezer said the tefillas wasn't answered. Yomer Rabbi Akiva. So then Rabbi Akiva went, and he took over. V'amar Avinu Malkeinu, and he said, "Our Father, our King, the Yarduk Shamim." The clouds gathered, and the rain came down. Didn't even do a Shemayin Esrei. Okay, Havim Ranani Rabbanan. So what was going on? The sages started murmuring. Like, ooh, what's, look, Rebbe Lezer's prayers weren't answered, Rebbe Kiva's prayers were answered. They were wondering. Yotz Abbas Kol V'Amra, a heavenly voice went out and said, Loi Mipnei Shezeh Gadol Mizeh, the heavenly voice declared, it's not that one is greater than the other. The fact Rebbe Kiva was answered is not because Rebbe Kiva is greater than Rebbe Lezer. El Shezeh Mavra Amidaisav, this one, Mini Rabbi Akiva, is Ma'aral Midaisav. That means that he doesn't respond back to somebody who wronged him. V'zeinu Ma'aral Midaisav, and this one doesn't do that. This one does react. Okay, end the Gemara. So the Gemara says that the heavenly voice said, not that one is greater than the other, but this one doesn't react to when somebody get, this one doesn't react back to someone who wronged him, and this one does. So Bishras Santa asked, so isn't that a reason to say one is greater than the other? This person seems to have a better character, and this one has more self-control. This one has a better character, and this one doesn't have as good a character. This one has to react, this one doesn't react. Isn't that a reason to say one is greater than the other? The Gemara is saying, no, they're not greater than the other. They're the same, but this one does that. They're not the same, they're very different. One reacts back. One basically can't, you know, he's got to react back, and the other one controls himself. Isn't that a reason to say one is greater than the other?
Does that mean learning?
But Gadol doesn't mean necessarily learning. It means greater in general. Greater means in general, and this should definitely be, say, if a person has better character, which seems to be the person. Okay, that should be a reason why his prayer should be answered. Perhaps. Mm-hmm. Okay, listen. Maybe you want to say it's all about learning. Perhaps. Bishal Salanta said like this. Bishal Salanta said that in order to understand this Gemara, we have to go back to a famous Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos talks about the non-Jew who wanted to convert. He walked over to Shammai and said, "Convert me on one foot." Hmm. What did Shammai do? Chased him out.
See you later.
Beis Hillel said to him, "You want to learn Torah on one foot? Fine. What you don't like done to yourself, don't do to others. That's the Torah. Everything else is commentary. Go learn." Okay. And the Gemara goes through a number of situations where a Gentile would come and basically request conversion inappropriately. Beis Shammai kicked him out, and Beis Hillel took him in. So, is this about Beis Shammai? Beis Shammai just he's a very impatient person. He's a very very impatient. Is that what it's all about? Is this Gemara telling us that Beis Shammai just doesn't have the patience for these Mishigasin, and that's why he threw him out?
No.
So Bishalas, yeah, what? So Bishalas Alanta explained that actually this was another Machlekes argument between Shammai and Hillel. When basically a person is disrespectful to Torah, what is your reaction? Do you react in a way that you stand up for the honor of Torah? Which is what Shammai was doing. All these people were being disrespectful to Torah in their request. Maybe there was a certain degree of sincerity, Beis Hillel saw sincerity. Maybe Shammai also saw that they meant it. But again, they're being disrespectful. And Beis Shammai held that when you're disrespectful to Torah, you've got to stand up for the honor of Torah. You're going to be disrespectful, get out. Beis Hillel said no. Even if they're disrespectful, if you see that they mean to convert, let them come in. So basically, what you have here is that there is a philosophical argument here. When you go ahead and somebody is disrespecting Torah like these people did, do you act in a manner of anger, right? Do you basically, they act wrongly, and therefore now you act back to them appropriately, or do you let it go? Okay, so it's not a question of Beis Shammai being impatient. This was Beis Shammai's philosophy. This is what he felt was the proper way of how to deal with someone who is not respectful to Torah. So Bishal Salanter wants to suggest, Rebbe Lezer was a student of Beis Shammai. Rebbe Yekiva was a student of Hillel. And therefore, it comes out that Rebbe Lezer was part of that belief, right, that you can't give in as much. When somebody is going to be disrespectful to Torah, these people were, you've got to respond properly. And Beis Hillel said, we can let it go. We can let it go. Therefore, if Rebbe Lezer didn't let things go, then Hashem can't let things go. This is the way it works. If Rebbe Lezer wants to turn to the Rabbanit Shalom in a drought and say, Rabbanit Shalom, don't look at what they did. Let it go. Rabbanit Shalom says to Rebbe Lezer, you can't ask for that, because you don't do that. And even though you don't do that because you feel that's the right thing and your Rebbe told you that's the right thing, but at the end of the day, if you don't do that, you can't evoke that same kind of response from Hashem. Rebbe Kiva, on the other hand, was a student of Hillel. And Beis Hillel was of the opinion that even in those times when they're wrong, let it go. Therefore, Rebbe Kiva was the one who could evoke the same kind of reaction from Hashem. He could dive in and say to Rebbe Nishalaylam, don't look at what they've done wrong to you. Let it go. And Rebbe Nishalaylam responded to him because that's the way he acted. So again, is one greater than the other? No, because they're both doing what they hold is what the Torah wants from them. So they're not doing anything wrong, but at the end of the day, they're not, so to speak, they're not letting it go. At the end of the day, if you don't let it go, then the Rebbe Nishalaylam doesn't let it go either. Because it's not about you should have let it go, you should have let it go, and as a punishment for not doing so, Hashem doesn't let it go, but doesn't let it go either. It's not about a punishment. It's the way things work. It's the spiritual nature of how things run. If you let things go even when you're wrong, the Rebbe Nishalaylam will do the same thing. If you are merciful, the Rebbe Nishalaylam will be merciful to you. It doesn't matter whether it's not about whether you should have been merciful. If you're not merciful, the Rebbe Nishalaylam is not merciful to you. That's the nature of things in the Rebbe Nishalaylam.